Welcome to The Contemplative Life. Three pastors, friends, and spiritual companions help us explore spirituality through a contemplative lens.
I'm Christina Roberts.
I'm Chris Roberts.
I'm Christina Kaiser. We're glad you joined us. Hello, everyone. It's good to be with you today. Today, we are talking about embodied spirituality. And our guest is joining us for this conversation all the way from Boston. This is Mary Reynolds. She is a certified spiritual companion and yoga instructor. So, hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
So, maybe we'll just jump right in and start chatting about things. So often, we hear people talk about mindfulness with yoga. How would you distinguish between this mindfulness and contemplative spirituality?
So I think, first of all, they're not always separate. So I might be practicing mindfulness, and it would look exactly the same as if I were practicing contemplative spirituality, especially in my case, because I consider myself a really spiritual person. So whether I'm, you know, washing the dishes, brushing my teeth, or like literally sitting in bed praying, it's all kind of, I'm trying to, you know, connect with the spirit of God and bring that in. So that's probably not exactly the answer that you want, though. That's when they're not distinguished. The way I would separate them is that I would say you don't have to be spiritual or identify as a spiritual person to practice mindfulness. So that would be a key difference. Mindfulness is accessible and ready for anyone, anytime. If you are breathing and alive, you have a heartbeat, you can practice mindfulness.
That makes a lot of sense, because I've been reading this Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics. I'm almost all the way through it. So pretty soon I can start talking about a new book that I'm reading. But they talk about this, right? The notion of mindfulness is for anybody. This is a secular book. And then there's contemplative spirituality, which it sounds like you have a lot of experience with that too. Yes.
It's funny. Yes, I do. If I told you like my practices, you'd say, oh, that's contemplative spirituality. But I've never really used that phrase to talk about what I do.
What words do you use? Because I'm going to soak it all up from you.
I mean, I experience life through my body. When I am not active and moving for an extended period of time, like beyond just regular daily movements, for me, I move a lot and I bring like Jesus into that. So when I was teaching yoga or leading yoga in a church setting, they were like, you cannot call that yoga. And I was like, cool, let's call it Jesus yoga. And they're like, no, there's still yoga. And I was like, okay, how about spiritual movement? So spiritual movement is something I've often called what I do, but really I'm just, you know what? I'm intentionally moving my body and connecting with my thoughts and my breath. I'm rambling. I'm an external processor. Sorry.
As are so many of us, actually.
So I have two questions for you, Mary. The first one has to do with something that you said earlier, mm-hmm. and that's people that don't consider themselves spiritual mm-hmm. can do mindfulness or yoga. But I would contend that we're all spiritual, whether we mm-hmm. think we are or not. And how do you see that evolving during the practice?
I think this is where it's interesting, because my context, I'm in the Boston area. Right. I'm in New England. And so I think I've been here a couple of decades. I was born in Ohio, which was a very different climate, both in terms of weather and spiritual wise. So I my wording is very mindful of where I am speaking, the people I am speaking with. So I agree with you, Chris. I think all humans are spiritual. Some of us are more in tune with that. We, of course, you know, life happens to us. We have experiences that can make our connection to ourself and our spirit, it can wound it. So it's not always by choice that someone does not identify as spiritual consciously. So I agree with you. I think we all have a spirit. It's in us. I think the spirit of God, but there is a spirit greater than our own in each one of us. Like I like to think of it as a little fire. We have this fire in us. That's our spirit. And we want to keep it going. We want to fan that flame, not too much, but we don't want it to die out either. And so I think, you know, I think yoga and mindfulness, contemplative spirituality, that tends to attract certain type of people and detract certain type of people. So just by virtue of someone choosing to explore mindfulness or contemplative spirituality, I'm going to guess that their heart is already open to the idea of I am spiritual, or at least I have the potential. There's something greater than me out there. I think there's already an openness for those who choose to experiment with this, what we're talking about. And then I think with that, you know, it doesn't matter how big that openness is. I think if you just have a little bit, as you practice mindfulness, as you practice, you know, contemplative spirituality, you fan that flame and it grows. And I think over time and practice, experience, you awaken to the fullness, or more of, you know, closer to the fullness of your spiritual self.
No, that was great. And which I think leads right into my second question is, why do you think that we tend to shy away from embodied spirituality as individuals? What would be some things that would detour us from that?
I recently have been reading The Body Keeps Score, which is about how we store trauma in our body. And just some of my other reading, Internal Family Systems is something I've been reading about. And I'm finding, so I'm going to answer your question with the lens of what I'm really getting into right now and reading and learning. So I think a big reason is possibly trauma. Little T trauma, big T trauma, all of that gets stored in our bodies. And so it can actually not feel safe to sit in stillness with your body and your breath. That can actually, for some people, elicit like a fight or flight or freeze. And so, of course, they, you know, for the people that is true, I don't think that they would naturally go in this direction. Perhaps a friend or a therapist might recommend it. And then it needs to be, you need to proceed very carefully. It needs to be really safe, like first and foremost. So if I'm working with someone and I don't know their past, we start very slow with even body mind connection, like the mindfulness practice, for example. If you're going to sit and just focus on your breath or a part of your body, that's like 30 seconds, maybe. And it's only after there's been a really safe container set. And I think also people are really busy, right? That's what people say. Well, why don't you, oh, I'm too busy. So those are two reasons.
Mary, I so appreciate what you're saying and sort of recognizing. It's interesting because that book has come up with several people that I'm companioning. And so that's a theme that I'm dealing with or companioning with others. And also some of the people that come from maybe an evangelical culture that have been taught to be disembodied and a lot of shame around body, etc. Yes. So I'm curious if you also have encountered some of those spaces in your companioning and how you've been able to gently invite people into that awareness and the beauty of body.
I haven't actually had any people for whom I'm companioning that fall into that category. Again, I'm in the Northeast. Not a ton of evangelicals here. I have had just friends who I'm companioning as a friend. They do fall into that camp. You know, it's truly, my spiritual director says the pace of grace. You move at the pace of grace. And I love that. I think depending on the person sitting in front of me, like they set the pace. It's very slow. And it might even begin with talking about what that might look like to sit, not actually doing the practice of, and I keep saying sitting and breathing, but it can be many more, you know, like sitting and just moving your arms up and down, you know, that really accessible movement, going really slowly, starting off with parts of the body that are easier to connect with, whether it's there's trauma in the background or like you're saying, like the shame, the body shame, but just sort of like, well, your fingers, goodness, can you imagine if you didn't have your fingers? So let's look at our fingers. Let's look at our nails. You know, they do a lot cooking or just like petting a dog or going to, you know, we use our hands. So starting with something that is kind of on a limb, toes, feet are also great because can, you know, for those who are able to walk on their feet, what a gift. So just connecting with parts of your body that there's less shame. And then you can kind of slowly move to other parts or bigger movements or even, you know, just practicing thinking about like keeping it in the mind and thinking about what it would look like to take bigger movements or love a part of your body that you haven't been able to, that's been holding shame. And something I really enjoy doing a lot is just like taking your hand, picking a part of your body, one that comes to mind that you're maybe critical of, and just placing your hand on that with a non-judgmental, and some of these words are so silly, let's observe non-judgmentally, but really taking your own hand and placing it, your belly, your bum, like what's the place that you've been hard on, your hips, just put a hand there and feel it. It's beautiful. It's exactly as it was created, you know, to be. And that physical touch of your own hand, so it's safe to reconnect with that part. And if it feels okay, even saying, you know, to that part, like, oh, thank you. Thank you that you work, that you help me walk, or that you hold food that nourishes my body. Or
I love that. I love the accessible language and also just the accessible way in which you invite us to notice and to name and to celebrate, or to just even acknowledge, like not even, maybe I'm not there of celebrating, but I could acknowledge, yeah, I have hips and these hips have bore a baby, or, you yes know, I have a bum, and or whatever it is. And just to be mm-hmm able to be in that space. Before our recording here today, I had my spiritual direction session I meet with a Catholic nun over Zoom. She lives in Iowa. And sometimes when I'm riled up in the session, she'll end mm-hmm with, you know, let's get up and do some movement, and inviting me to, you know, do some different stretches. And she's an older, you know, gray-haired nun, and it's I love it. Yeah. But just really paying attention to, you know, let's open up that chakra. And what are you noticing as you were vulnerable today in your speech? How can your yes body mirror that? So mm-hmm I love, Mary, just hearing your accessibility with language and how the body mirrors where we're at. That grace of pace is beautiful.
So I know that there's all sorts of resources that you put out for people, and we'd love for people to be able to connect with those resources. Are there places where people can find you, Mary?
Yes. So I have a website, enjoyyoga.com. And through there, you can access the YouTube channel that I have. Currently, and I've never done this before, but I'm doing for the duration of Lent, each day during the week, Monday through Friday, weekends are off, just offering a movement. It's called the Dance of Stillness. The Dance of Stillness. Every day it's important that we move, but it's also important to be still, and kind of that interplay of movement and stillness. So each day there's some sort of movement stillness offering on YouTube. And I'm on Instagram. I'm playing around with that. That's also new. And those offerings are on.
And they'll Instagram stay as well there, right? Like even after the yes Lenten season. Yes. So yeah, if for some reason you come to this at some later date and you think, I want a dance of stillness, like you can still get one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one thing I will say, I really do believe that moving our body helps us to move emotions through it's good for your nervous system. It's just good. And everybody can move, even if it's just your head or your jaw, your mouth, like there's some part of your body that you can move. Whenever I do videos, I always try to make them like 10 minutes or less because people are busy. And if you want to, everyone can spare 10 minutes or less somewhere in their day. And I also try to make it like, I don't change my clothes. I don't have a yoga mat. I do them, you know, I'll do a recording. I did a recording this morning in the kitchen. Anywhere. You don't have to change, like, just right now I need to move. Let me move right now. So I really try to make them accessible to all.
I love it. Oh my gosh. That's perfect.
Something that has sort of stirred for me as we've been talking about this connectedness to our body. I think as we become connected to our body, we become connected to all things. So I'm finding as I'm sort of paying attention to my body, I am also aware of my surroundings and my environment in a new way, which I think enlivens my spirituality as well. So if I'm taking a walk in the woods and I see this tree, and like you were saying, I become thankful for the tree, and I have this connectedness to nature that I didn't have before. Do you see that often in your practice?
Absolutely. So I live in the city, but there's a little park nearby, and I walk every morning out in it. And I try to, you know, when we walk, we often look down. So I really intentionally try to look up at the sky. And if you notice, when you look down, it's such a narrow view. But when you take your gaze up, it's vast. Just like our spirituality, just like our world. And I often find, kind of related to what you're saying, is when I look up at the sky, and this morning the clouds were magnificent. They were, I don't know my cloud types, but it was like, it just looked like a cartoon. It was really beautiful. And I thought, like, has this formation ever been? And who are the other people around the world looking up at the same sky? So there's this connectedness with nature, with other human beings, the diversity of us, animals. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And again, just love how accessible that is, that just merely changing our gaze, the position of our neck, opens up a whole world to us.
I've found my way into stretching and stuff. Pain has really brought me to stretching, because I've had a couple of different times in my life where my back went out. The first time, the chiropractor did like one pop, and I'm like, I have been experiencing 3 days of horrific pain, and it just takes one pop and I'm good to get my body in alignment. And you know, the second and the third time that I had that pain, it's like, you know, I probably really ought to strengthen my core and probably do some stretches, and I'm still really bad at it.
Sure.
But I have an awareness, a growing awareness, that if I do that more, my body will appreciate it.
And I love how you word that. First of all, don't downplay the awareness. So many people don't even have the awareness. So that's the first step, and you got that. And then you're building. I mean, I would say the same. People have always said, oh, you must do yoga every day. No, I try to, but it's hard. It's hard. It's practice. It's practice, but I'm glad that you have found it.
Yes. And I hope to continue more on my own in private, maybe to your YouTube video, not next to another sweaty body somewhere and dealing with my own body shame with another person present.
There are a lot of videos out there that you can do in the comfort of your own home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was Adam was right. You guys are awesome. All of you.
Very fun.
Well, this is the part of our podcast where we take a little bit of time to talk about what we are into.
This week, I am into breakfast dates, which I have been into for many years now. I don't know, whenever the kids season hit, somehow evening dates just went out the window. And so it dawned on us, I don't remember what child, like, oh, they're in like preschool or something right now. We could actually have a breakfast date. And so that is a highlight for me, is having breakfast dates. And we just discovered a new Ancora Cafe just opened up. It's a new cafe in town. And they have these, normally I don't eat French toast. That's not my thing. I do savory. But I'm like, I'm going to order two things, a savory thing and a sweet thing. And these French toast dipper sticks with this amazing sauce that you dip it in. And I like can't wait for day next week so that I can get it again because it was lovely. So that is what I am into this week.
Well, I've been into poetry, and particularly poetry that talks about light. And there are some Mary Oliver poems that I've been talking to about light. Right now, the sun is shining brightly in the morning. We are sort of hopefully on the cusp of spring. And so I've been exploring all the different facets of light. And I've also been thinking about like the colors that light brings out. And so thinking about whites and yellows and reds and pinks and purples, particularly as the sun is rising or setting. So I've been into poetry exploring light.
I like that because I feel like you are into light another week, but it was more about the twilight. So this is a nuanced light that you're bringing this week. So I love that.
That's right. Yes, exploring the space of light. Speaking of which, it has been light in the mornings, which it's going to go away because we're going to get daylight savings and then it's going to get dark again in the mornings. So there's something beautiful about something that you know is not permanent. So every morning when I get up, I'm enjoying the fact that it is light outside and doing my workout not in complete darkness. So that is what I am into today. So for those of you who are listening, if you are interested in more resources, definitely check out the description of this podcast for some of the things we mentioned today. Also, we invite you to check out thecontemplativelife.net. Thanks, everybody. See you later.